I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. A week and a half ago, the National Center for Lesbian Rights descended on the small town of Plainfield to co-host a gathering with the Brattleboro-based Green Mountain Crossroads. The topic on the agenda was looking at the issues faced by LGBTQ people in rural areas. It's part of the national organization's Rural Pride Initiative, started a few years ago. The project aims to combat the stereotype that all gay and trans people live in urban areas and to address some of the issues that people in rural areas find challenging. Many of those issues will feel familiar to people who live rurally of all stripes: the struggle to date and find community, a lack of healthcare access, worries about kids being bullied in school. But often those challenges are increased or exacerbated for people who are non-binary and or queer. We wanted to take a look at some of those issues too and invite your stories if this is something that affects you. What's it like to be LGBTQ in rural Vermont? And we're joined today by two people who think about these issues locally. H.B. Lozito is the executive director of Green Mountain Crossroads, a Brattleboro-based nonprofit focused on issues for rural LGBTQ Vermonters. H.B. was at that summit in Plainfield and was, in fact, the Green Mountain Crossroads was the co-host of that at the end of April. H.B., welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, Jane. Thanks so much for having me.
We're really glad to have you. And Dana Kaplan is also here. We're really glad to have Dana. Dana's the executive director for Outright Vermont, a Burlington-based statewide youth organization that works to better the lives of LGBTQ youth. Dana, welcome back. Nice to have you.
Thanks so much, Jane.
So, HB, I want to start with you because I want to hear a little bit about this conference in Plainfield on April 27th and what the discussion was like.
Yeah, so we did this event in collaboration with the National Center for Lesbian Rights. As you said, they've been doing these all over the U.S., and we have been doing these types of events as well, focused here in Vermont. And so we really wanted to cover a breadth of topics. You know, we talked about youth and elders and healthcare issues, incarceration and involuntary hospitalization and agriculture. We certainly didn't cover everything, but we covered a lot in our one day of time. Folks joined us from all over Vermont as well as New Hampshire, from, you know, where we are down in Brattleboro up to the Canadian border. And we really were able to dig into a lot of things. The perspective that NCLR was bringing enabled us to both have that national level perspective, and then we brought in a lot of folks from all kinds of different communities in Vermont to help us look at what's happening here on the ground and compare the two.
Tell me about some specific topics. Like, I know one of the topics of conversation was what it's like to be a queer farmer, for example. And you know, that's an issue that what it's like to be a farmer is certainly something Vermonters talk about a lot. What are some of the issues specifically for queer farmers in Vermont?
Yeah, definitely. That was I was in that session. It was great. We brought up Meryl Latronica, who's actually down in Greenfield, Mass. At Just Roots Farm. A lot of folks were talking about issues related to land access, right? We know that agricultural land is very expensive. And we also know that LGBTQ people, you know, we very frequently are alienated or disconnected from families of origin that may have access to those kinds of capital. So people, all kinds of farmers of all kinds of identities, often have challenges accessing land, but LGBTQ people have that added disconnect and pressure of not having access to those inheritances. So that's definitely an issue. But people also really love working in agriculture. I was a farmer for 10 years before I came to this work. And just feeling really connected to each other, working in collaboration with your bodies and other people, is also a really incredible experience as an LGBTQ person living in a rural area.
You know, Dana, some people might look at Vermont and say the whole state is rural, but presumably there are some differences between living in Burlington or even Brattleboro and living in some place like, you know, Whitingham or Island Pond. Can you illuminate what you see as some of the differences, even in Vermont, between living more rurally and living in a more urban environment?
Sure. So I think that we know, I mean, there's national studies that talk about the discrepancies between resources with folks in more urban areas versus suburban and rural communities. So when we think about school systems, for example, we're thinking about rural communities having fewer supportive administration and staff in their schools. We're thinking about inclusive curriculum that isn't really reflective of what queer and trans youth are needing and looking for in terms of possibilities and hope for themselves. We're looking at fewer anti-harassment policies. We're looking at fewer gender and sexuality alliance clubs in schools. We're looking at less inclusive sex education. So,
and is that because of a bias or because of a lack of experience or a lack of financial resources?
Well, what we know to be true, I mean, this is all in context. What we know to be true in terms of youth experience and what youth tell us statewide is when we are in more rural spaces, we have access to fewer opportunities for seeing ourselves reflected in healthy adult role models. We have more barriers when it comes to transportation and accessing the communities that we know youth need in order to just get to be kids and lead thriving lives, right? Getting to see yourself reflected in community. So I think that when we go into more rural spaces, we just increase isolation. We know that it's hard to be a queer or trans youth in the best of circumstances. So when we talk about rural space and rural context, we just add extra barriers.
And you, Dana, specifically work at Outright Vermont with young people. And so you're looking at these from the perspective of the school system, of kids who may be in isolation. And certainly adults have a little bit more agency. You know, adults can perhaps more easily, although not always, choose where they live and choose to leave and go to a bigger city. And certainly young people have fewer financial resources and are more beholden to where their family decides that they're going to live.
Yeah.
HB, what about other issues, other challenges for people who are queer or trans and living rurally in Vermont, not necessarily related to young people?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all of those issues that Dana mentioned that are true for youth are also true for adults, LGBTQ folks living rurally all over the U.S. I mean, right now in the last several years, we've seen a really sharp rise in visibility for trans people. But not a commensurate rise in access to resources or power. So those things are very difficult for folks. If you're the only trans person who's visible in your community, even if you're not out, people are seeing you in a different way, but your life hasn't gotten measurably better in many other ways. So those are some of the kinds of challenges. Isolation is huge. Again, folks are often the only person in their community, and so we know that 41% of trans people, for instance, attempted suicide in the last year, not because necessarily we have higher incidence of struggling with mental illness, but because the world that we're living in wants to harm us constantly. And that is living with that on the daily is very challenging, especially if you're isolated in your only community. Access to healthcare is huge. We're working with the Brattleboro Memorial Hospital right now on increasing their competency and working with LGBTQ people. But again, if there's one hospital and you don't have options of different places to go, that can be really challenging.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit more about that, HB? I mean, specifically, we know that across the state and specifically in rural areas, just finding a primary care physician is difficult for many people. But if you're queer, if you're non-binary, what are the additional challenges then to not just finding somebody who's available, but somebody who respects you and who you feel like is actually treating you the way you'd like to be treated?
Yeah, definitely. It's huge. I mean, and those challenges can start from the moment that you walk in the door. The conversations we're having down in Brattleboro at the hospital, it starts with that very first person you see. If they don't call you by your name, that's really alienating. And you might not even want to sit through the rest of the waiting room and to get in to see that provider.
Name because your name on your birth certificate or your driver's license might not be the name that you go by? Or do you
definitely
mean your pronoun choice?
Yeah, I mean, both of those choices. I think your name, if it's they're not using your true name because your legal name is something different, if they're not using your pronouns because the way that you are presenting the time that you walk into the office isn't what they expect to go with the pronoun that you choose, both of those issues are huge.
We've gotten a lot of comments from people on Reddit this morning. Green Mountaintop says, "We feel extremely happy living in rural Vermont. We haven't met very many other couples, but that really isn't an issue because everyone is so accepting here. It's the exact place to be. A lesbian couple in the state I'm from in the Midwest went to a neighborhood block party this past weekend where other Others did not attend because they were there. I can't even imagine. We've gotten into the natural, organic farming crowd, and they're amazing. Healthy food, healthy relationships, inclusiveness for everyone. Another Redditor named Sneaky Stewart says, I grew up an hour and a half away from Burlington in a tiny town in rural Vermont. I would say the politics were 60 to 40 conservative to liberal, but no one had anything bad to say about the LGBT community. They're very accepting of all walks of life. And let's go to Aaron, who's calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Aaron. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Hi. So thanks for taking my call. I've been I started a project this year with my friend Brenda Churchill in which we hold a sign at various farmers markets around the state that says, ask a transgender person. And we're encouraging people to ask us questions. And just to be clear, it's not just okay to walk up to a random transgender person and ask them questions. And that's actually one of the reasons we wanted to invite people, invite dialogue. But one pattern that I have noticed sort of between urban and rural areas in Vermont is that I think folks in rural areas are less likely to know or think that they know someone in their community who identifies as transgender. And so that can be a, I think that can be a challenge, particularly challenging to work with people who, you know, if your primary experience with transgender community is stereotypes or people, personalities on television, that can be a challenge. I think it's a lot easier if you know individuals and you can see how diverse our community is.
Aaron, have you already started this project? Are you at the farmers markets now?
Yeah.
What kind of questions are you getting from people?
All sorts of great questions. I think some of my favorite questions are actually folks who aren't used to talking about trans issues and have questions and don't even know how to phrase them or frame them, you know, trying to figure out how to even ask a question. It's great.
Well, I'd love to hear more about that project. I'm glad you called. Thanks for telling us. Dana, you know about that project?
I do, yeah. And, you know, just in hearing Aaron's story, I think one of the things that it also makes me think about that I think is important to mention is just the context in which we live in. And so to some extent, I think there's also a really important question to ask around who gets to be visible and who doesn't get to be visible and for whom their safety is an issue or whose lives are sort of hyper scrutinized when it comes to visibility. And we need to put this all into context of the current world that we live in 2018, and we know that racism is alive and well, and we know that sexism is alive and well. And so I think it's just important for us to hold that reality as we think about what it means to be affirming and what it means to create radical projects like what Aaron is talking about, that some folks have access to be able to do that and some folks don't. And when I think about youth context, really what we are hoping to do and what we are aiming to do is to be able to recognize that not everybody is starting in the same place and to create matching experiences where everybody, regardless of the multitudes of their identities, gets to see themselves reflected in healthy adult role models and have that peer community. But I just think that's important to put into this conversation.
Explain a little bit more what you mean, Dana, about who gets to be visible.
So I'm having a conversation with you right now, and I am a white person, and I am a masculine person. If we frame that within the larger context of who has more power, there's more safety in me to be able to do that. And there are situations where I'm not going to be receiving the same amount of attention as, say, somebody who is more feminine in their identity. As a person of color who's living in, amongst just a sea of whiteness, right? Like that is real. And we need to be able to hold that as we think about what is going to create better situations and better life for all LGBTQ folks statewide.
We got another note from Vanner11 on Reddit who says, I'm moving to Vermont in July, and as a lesbian, I'm pretty excited. In my many visits, it wasn't hard to find gay events online, and apparently there's even a Pride Center, yes, there is, which I can't say most places I've lived in have had. I'm not a resident yet, but my impression is that the LGBTQ community in Vermont is, like many things, commensurate with the population of the state at large. Doesn't necessarily mean it's bad, just probably different. And then somebody going by Extension Passenger says, says, I like Vermont. I only moved here recently. A lot of people outside Vermont assume that everybody in the state is middle class, liberal, organic, etc. Thankfully, that's not the case. It's obviously different from being gay in the city. There are some things I miss, and I'm considering moving to Burlington to have access to certain things, but I really like the people. And then Extension Passenger was asked, well, why are you thinking of moving? And they write, I like having some kind of art house cinema around. Also, I really like being able to get laid, which is not always easy in the middle of nowhere. HB, dating in a rural community can be hard for anybody, but if the pool is smaller, it's even more challenging. What do you hear about the dating scene and forming community and relationships and friendships in rural Vermont when the community can be very small and very far apart?
Yeah, definitely. I think even dating, you know, Dana mentioned power, and I think even dating relates back to power and relates back to visibility and relates back to safety. You know, trans misogyny and misogyny in queer communities is so real. Femme invisibility is very real. People not reading other people as queer. Those signs may be different that we look for in rural spaces and not. I always joke that when I go to my hometown in Maine, I think everyone is a lesbian because there's all these people wearing crew neck sweatshirts and have short haircuts, and it's confusing and lovely and wonderful and amazing.
Gay or European.
And yeah, it's even within dating, you know, we have to look at power. We have to look at class. We have to look at race and all of those kinds of things. And how are they feeding into our experiences? Who has access to be able to have dating apps that aren't only full of your exes because there's only four of you in town? You know, are people able to pay for internet to even have those kinds of things? We know that that's not always true. And I, you know, someone, one of the folks who wrote in said they love Vermont, and I love living in Vermont too. I love living in rural areas. And part of what I love is that we're all here together, right? In urban spaces, you can really like slice it down to a group of people, a community that only matches your exact narrowness of identity. And here, you know, we're all together by necessity because there aren't always very many of us. So I think that creates some interesting possibilities and also some challenges for getting together and finding love in our spaces.
Mm. Dana, anything to add?
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that is so real. And as I hold sort of the youth experience, you know, what we hear from youth, when there's just a different level of self-discovery and trying to figure out who we are as authentic beings, which is what is going on. We work with youth up through the age of 22, as young as three-year-olds, six-year-olds, is really that first need to be able to say, this is who I am, and to explore self. And I think that that is hard enough to do when you are moving through a world that doesn't celebrate your identity, that doesn't say that this is valid and that this is, you can have a beautiful, healthy, thriving life. And so within the context of youth, I think that need to be able to see yourself reflected, that like that difference is critical. We need to do better at being able to recognize the multitudes of everybody. But that for youth experience, what youth are really reflecting back to us is, I need a space to be able to find my people. Because if I don't know what the word transgender means, I'm trying to make sense of my lived experience as a young person. And that's where things like inclusive curriculum and having more professional development with you know, healthcare and medical providers and mental health, like that's where all of that stuff becomes really, really necessary.
And let's go to Jonathan, who's calling in from Norwich. Hi, Jonathan. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you. I have a 10-year-old child who's gender non-binary. And being in Norwich, we're close to Hanover, New Hampshire, Lebanon, New Hampshire, White River Junction. So we're definitely not in the most rural kind of situation. But even with all of the resources that are nearby, our child really has had a very hard time finding mental health support that really works for them because their issues, the mental health providers just have no experience or understanding hardly of gender non-binary issues. And in fact, our kid saw, you know, was having a lot of sort of emotional distress for a long time, and saw two people who I would describe as excellent therapists, and yet it never occurred to them to ask our kid about being non-binary. Yeah. And it's only by happenstance, by meeting a non-binary person at summer camp, that our child learned of the concept. And for that matter, I had never heard of the concept, and neither had my wife.
Jonathan, I'm really glad you raised that issue and raised that question that, you know, it's difficult. And we've talked about this before on the show, how difficult it is to find therapists in Vermont and the access to mental health. So, HB, let me start with you. You know, here's Jonathan saying it's especially difficult if your child is non-binary to figure out, you know, a good therapist. And that must be one of the mental health must be one of the issues that comes up when you look at these issues.
Definitely. It's a huge issue. And I want to, you know, validate and affirm that Jonathan's child is not alone. I'm a genderqueer person. And I had a really difficult time finding a great therapist that worked for me. And I live in Brattleboro, where, you know, therapists of all stripes are a dime a dozen. It can be really, really challenging. And I think, again, you know, I know I'm saying power a lot. That cycles back to me for power of, you know, not so long ago, trans people were, you know, not criminalized, but really essentially in the DSM, the guidance book for mental health providing, you know, being trans was listed as a disability, essentially. And so, you know, only in the last few years has that come out, which has a really cascading effect, right? Trans people, there's not that many gender queer, gender nonconforming trans people who are therapists. Not that you necessarily have to share an identity to work with your patient. But in this kind of case, you know, what Jonathan's talking about, where their child is not seeing very many people that are reflecting their experience, that can go a really long way.
Yeah, or having a therapist who, you know, maybe just hasn't experienced this and isn't thinking that this could be what this child is dealing with. Maybe I should ask this child if they're non-binary, you know, if they're wondering about their gender identity, you know, that might not be it might not be an anti-trans bias, but it might just be not a question that they think of. And so, you know, not having a lot of literacy in that subject in a rural area must make it more difficult to find a provider.
Definitely. And I think, you know, so often we as trans people are put in the position of needing to educate our healthcare providers, which is not an experience that I can imagine cisgender people are having very frequently, right? And it's not necessarily, you know, we found with a lot of providers, folks are very open and willing to learn and interested to learn, know the dangers, and want to support our community, but just don't know. And so, you know, how are folks who need care, trans people who need care, now being forced to wait or needing to wait or needing to educate their own providers is really a challenge.
Let's go to Ewan, who's calling in from Bakersfield. Hi, Ewan. Go right ahead.
Hi. I am the former editor of Out in the Mountains, the state's only queer newspaper for 20 years or so. And I live in a small town, Bakersfield, and I just wanted to say two things. One is, somebody mentioned apps and dating apps and so on, and we don't have any cell service within 5 miles of Bakersfield. And so it's not, I don't even have a smartphone because it's not, there's no point, you know. So I'm speaking to you on a landline.
Better quality anyway, Ewan.
Yes. And second, what I want to say is, there's a lot of hope out here. Mm-hmm. When we first moved here, you know, I one time found a big L in front of my driveway, and I thought, who did that? You know, wanted to brand us as lesbians, and turned out it was actually a marker for painting the yellow lines on the newly repaved road. It just happened to be in front of our driveway, but. The more important story is that 2 years ago, after having lived here for 32 years, I was elected town moderator for Bakersfield's town meeting. Mm-hmm. And they know who I am. I'm not quiet, as people who know me know. And you know, and that seems really positive to me. And plus, the church that's next door to our town hall flies a rainbow flag every day.
And this is
despite some history of, you know, a particular pastor being anti-gay, and he was moved along, and the church council decided we're going to do this, and so they did.
Well, so, you and I'm really glad to hear from you. We haven't heard from you in a while, so it's nice to hear from you and nice to hear your lived experiences and what it's like in your community. And also, you know, touching on that issue of worship and religion. And, you know, there are fewer places for people to worship when you're in a rural community, and that's difficult for many kinds of people, but especially if you don't feel welcome in your worship community. I want to bring another voice into the conversation here. Let's talk to Rory Malone for a few minutes. Rory is a senior at UVM and grew up in Fairfield and mostly in parts of Franklin County and is, of course, now in Burlington. Hi, Rory. Nice to talk with you.
Hello.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you've seen as the difference between living in Franklin County as a young person, as a non-binary person, and living now in the big city of Burlington?
I think I've seen a radically different environment in between the two, and I think it demonstrates that saying that Burlington's not in Vermont. I feel like living in Franklin County was an entirely different state in comparison to Burlington, and then of course UVM campus is its own bubble, separate from Burlington.
And when you say that bubble, so is there a judgment value on that? Is Burlington better? Are there sort of joys and challenges in both situations?
I think so. I think that Burlington feels a lot safer to me. It feels like I can access a lot more resources. I can find people more like me, and I've been able to find community and chosen family only after coming to Burlington. And definitely felt more isolated in Franklin County. But at the same time, sometimes if you're visibly transgender, non-conforming, sometimes it's easier to pass as cisgender in a rural area because people don't have an awareness of what it looks like to be visibly trans or what trans is or visibly queer. And then in Burlington, there's so many queer people that you can just walk down the street and see people that you recognize.
Hmm. When you say in some rural areas, it may be that people don't necessarily recognize when somebody is trans or non-binary, as opposed to somebody saying, oh, I know that person, that's Rory. And so they see you more as an individual. Is there a little bit of that, too, or is it more that you think people are just sort of not aware?
I think it's both. I think you can be seen as an individual, but, I think there's just a general lack of awareness, and sometimes I think for trans people, sometimes that creates an illusion of, safety because you can slip under the radar more when you could have been exposed to, a violent situation. And then you stand out more in urban areas. But I think at the same time, you also, if you're gender nonconforming in the rural Vermont areas that I've been in, you sometimes also stand out more. It's kind of two contradicting truths at once, and it depends on who you're interacting with.
Rory, what do you think? I mean, this is probably asked of all college seniors, so I apologize. But what do you think about after graduation and your future life? Do you have thoughts about whether you'd like to live in a rural or urban area? And that doesn't necessarily need to be based on your personal identity. But insofar as you think about, where you sort of feel comfortable, does the rural urban question come into play?
That's a really tough question for me because growing up, I always wanted to live in the country forever and stay there. Being raised in the country, if I had my own kids, I would only raise them in the country. So I definitely have a longing to go back for that, and I don't like the light pollution or the cars or the people. But at the same time, since I found so much queer community and chosen family here, it kind of makes me want to go to places like Boston, Montreal to find that community. But at the same time, I hate cities and can only see myself living in the country. I'll probably end up back in the mountains.
Well, Rory, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today and share your perspective and your experience, and good luck with the rest of your college career.
Thank you.
That's Rory Malone, who's at UVM, a senior studying environmental sciences, and they grew up in Franklin County, mostly in Fairfield. We're talking about what it's like to be rural and to have, to have an identity that either is visible or invisible, and to try to think about how that works depending on where you live in an rural or urban. Rural or urban environment. And we're hearing from many people with sharing their own experiences as well. Jamie is calling in from Calais. Hi, Jamie. Go right ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for doing this show on such an important issue to so many of us. I'm a trans woman who grew up in Maple Corner in the town of Calais, very rural, remote, north of Montpelier, and I grew up there. I moved to D.C. for 6 years when I transitioned down there, and then I moved back to Maple Corner, and I was initially a little nervous, you know, moving back to my home rural town, a different me. And I've been back 8 years now, and everything has been virtually perfect, as good as you can imagine. I love being in the community, and I don't see myself ever leaving, but as others have discussed, the downside is I have to drive an hour to see my doctor. I have to drive an hour to go to pretty much any events, LGBT specific events that are happening in Burlington.
Yeah, Jamie, I hear both that, that weighing, that, the good sides and the downsides and the challenges that anybody finds in their life. And I really appreciate you illuminating some of what it's been like for you. I want to take one more call here from Anya, who's calling in from the Lake Champlain Waldorf School in Shelburne and calling as part of the Queer Straight Alliance. Hi, Anya. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, y'all. So I'm Anya. I'm with the QSA for the Waldorf School in Shelburne. We are from different places in Vermont, so we just started our Queer Straight Alliance, and we've been doing it for a few weeks now, and it's going really well. And I think, so at our school, everyone is really accepting. It is really small. We have like 56 kids. So there are a lot less options for people who are queer. There's only a small group of us. And I think it can be hard not having a strong community, like in terms of like the LGBTQ, because we live like far apart from each other. So I think it can be difficult, being around people like us or that we, have the same beliefs as. So I think that's hard. But I also think that just being a part of any sort of LGBTQ community is really important. So, yeah.
Yeah, Anya, thanks to you and the QSA at Lake Champlain Waldorf for calling in and joining this conversation. I'm glad that you're listening and really appreciate that you called. And, Dana, this is nice because it sort of gets us to this question of what can help and what actions are you and HB and others taking. We just have a couple of minutes left, but I know, Dana, for you, one of the questions is having these alliances and resources in all rural communities, because obviously not everybody can get to Outright Vermont for the meetings in Burlington, for example.
Right. And we do have our social and support group, our signature program Friday Night Group, happening in Brattleboro and in Montpelier, and most recently, as of January, in Morrisville as well. So we do recognize the trend towards really needing to show up in more rural spaces. And I think one of our strengths as a youth organization is being current with the needs of youth and really taking their lead and hearing what they say and bending and shifting towards what the greatest needs are. And so that does feel really like a critical commitment that we have, is to continue to show up in more rural spaces. And then, some of the other work is really around helping to increase capacity in local communities. And I think it's important, again, to think about doing that in a culturally relevant context. So what the youth are doing at Champlain Waldorf School might be really different than what the youth up in Lamoille County are doing, or what is needed up in Newport. And I think that's part of the importance of having gender and sexuality alliances. So we hold a network of what is now about 75 GSAs across the state in middle and high schools. And so just this weekend, we are able to be a bridge to bring all those folks together. Anya was talking about how it's hard to be an only. And I think some of our power is being able to hold space to connect youth from across the state, to be able to be celebrated and to be able to see adult role models. And so there's power in just creating spaces where folks can find each other.
Yeah. And in working, I imagine, with other kinds of organizations like HB, you mentioned that you're working with the hospital to try to make sure that people are identified as they would like to be identified and treated with the respect that anybody would like to have as they're going through the medical process. You know, it's really interesting to hear from both of you about what you're working on and to hear from so many Vermonters sharing their perspectives. I really appreciate it and appreciate you. HB Lazito is Executive Director of Green Mountain Crossroads. Dana Kaplan is Executive Director of Outright Vermont. Thanks very much to both of you.
Thanks
for
Jane.
Having us.